MacCast, Wednesday, April 17th, 2019. Hey, Mac Geeks, it's time for your MacCast, the show for Mac Geeks by Mac Geeks. I'm Adam, and this is the show where we discuss all things Macintosh. How you doing? Welcome back to the MacCast. Funny thing happened on the way to recording this episode. I got a little bit sick last week, and you may be able to hear this. Could definitely hear it there. But I did a user group presentation on Thursday with a little bit of a cold and completely lost my voice. So that's why the episode's coming a little bit later than expected. Also, why I sound the way that I do. Maybe you noticed, maybe you didn't, but just figured we'd get that right out of the way up front. Happy to be back here with you for another episode of the MacCast. We have a lot of stuff to talk about. Unfortunately, I'm hoping my voice will hold out. I'm going to try and go through it a little more quickly than usual, but we'll see where we end up. We're going to get into Apple and Qualcomm for a little bit because that was kind of the big story this week. Also talk about what's next for iOS. A couple of updates related to the Find My applications, and also an interesting little thing with Apple Pencil. So we'll keep the news a little bit short this week, but we do have a lot of great feedback from you based on some of the things we talked about on the last few episodes of the MacCast. So we have a comment from a listener about the MacBook keyboard story that we discussed, I think, last week, and also a little bit of follow-up about Apple's transition to being a services company, reaction from someone in our community, and I just wanted to respond to that stuff. We're also going to dive into my impressions of the new AirPods, because I finally got mine, so I'll tell you what I think about those, and then also give you a little tip on fonts and iOS. So that will round out this episode of the MacCast. Before we dive into things, I do want to take a quick moment and thank a show sponsor. That sponsor is Malwarebytes. We all know that being Apple and Mac owners, we gain the benefits of having a lot of built-in protections and things on our computers that keep us as safe as possible from viruses and malware and things like that. But you're also smart enough to know, because you're in this community, that the flaw in that protection is us, right? We as humans, we're the people that can mess all that stuff up. And it happens. And if it's not you, it might be a family member or a friend, someone who's maybe not as quite as tech savvy, doesn't listen to the MacCast. You should probably tell them they should. And as much as we try to help them protect them from themselves, things happen. They might get viruses. They might get malware. And that's where a product like Malwarebytes comes into play. You've probably heard me talk about Malwarebytes on the show before, because I really think it is the best and easiest tool that you can use on the Mac to quickly scan, remove, and prevent malware. As a matter of fact, Malwarebytes has proven technology that absolutely crushes any growing threats of Mac malware. Malwarebytes scans the average Mac in 30 seconds, something that I really like about it. It's quick. It is great at removing adware and unwanted programs that can slow down your Mac, so it can also speed up performance if you've been hit by any of those things. And when you need more active protection, Malwarebytes can detect and remove viruses, ransomware, and other malware in real time with their advanced anti-malware technology. It catches dangerous threats automatically, so you're actually protected without even having to think about it. Finally, cybersecurity smart enough for the Mac. Visit malwarebytes.com/Mac for your free download and a 14-day trial of their premium offering. That's malwarebytes.com/Mac, and a big thank you to them for their support of the MacCast. Unfortunately for me, I think the biggest story of the week is one that I don't really enjoy covering, and that is lawsuits. If you've listened to the MacCast for a while, you know I'm not big on covering lawsuits. There was a big one starting up this week, actually going to trial here in San Diego, the Apple Qualcomm lawsuit. And just as opening arguments were getting started, something actually incredible happened. Again, I don't want to go into the details too much because I don't like this stuff, but the big news is that Apple and Qualcomm have settled. They did basically one day of sort of opening arguments, and those were actually a little bit weird if you heard them. And then they announced that they have a settlement going back to or becoming effective on April 1st of this year. And the good news here is actually a lot of it is about the business, and I'm happy to talk about that. So essentially, all the lawsuits between Apple and Qualcomm all over the world, all the actions, all that stuff is done. They've settled that. They're entering a 6-year licensing deal. It has a 2-year option to renew and a bunch of other stuff. And basically, Apple and Qualcomm are back in business together. There was actually some fallout from that because Intel announced almost immediately after, like the next day, I think it was, that they were getting out of the 5G modem business. So they're done. Apple and Qualcomm are back together. It's not really clear if Intel exiting was because of the Qualcomm settlement. They were worried they're not going to have Apple's business anymore, or if maybe Apple was sort of pushed or forced into settling with Qualcomm because Intel wasn't going to be able to deliver on their 5G modems. We really don't know. There's a lot of speculation going on right now. You'll hear analysts talking either direction, but really no one really knows because Apple and Qualcomm aren't really talking about it too much. They haven't disclosed any of those details. So it's just speculation. One thing we kind of do know about, though, was that Apple was trying to build up or has built up its own modem team. As a matter of fact, Fast Company has reported that Apple has a team of about 1,000 to 1,200 engineers actually working on modem chips. And I don't think that this settlement really changes that. I think that Apple still has plans to eventually develop their own modem chips. They probably want to integrate them into the chips on the iPhone. And they're still going to need Qualcomm for that because they do need licensing of Qualcomm technology and some of their patents to be able to produce those chips. So I don't think that changes. I think what changes a little bit is the timeline. Apple and Qualcomm, or I think Qualcomm specifically, came out and announced that the 2020 iPhone will feature 5G Qualcomm chips in it. So the earliest timeline we've heard for actually Apple doing its own cellular modem is 2021. And I think that that development still continues to proceed. So I don't think we're going to see 5G in the iPhone this year. As a matter of fact, I'm almost certain of it. I also don't think that we're likely to see Qualcomm modems in this year's iPhones because it's too late in the development cycle. Those things are already planned out, and I don't see Apple calling an audible just because they settled this agreement. I guess it could happen. Anything's possible, but probably not. Anyway, that's what's going on with Apple and Qualcomm and Intel and all the modem stuff that we've been talking about, speculating on, and waiting to see what happens. Now we have an answer, probably a lot quicker than many of us thought it was going to happen. One thing that I hadn't really been thinking about, to be honest, is what is happening next for iOS. But we're getting to that point in the news cycle where Worldwide Developer Conference is looming. I know spring is like coming up quick and going to be going by even more quickly. And we'll have Worldwide Developer Conference coming up. And everybody's going to wonder what is going on with Apple's operating systems, including iOS. Well, Guillerme Rambo over at 9to5Mac claims to have the scoop on some of the new features that we might see in iOS 13 at WWDC. Some of those features include dark mode coming to iOS finally. A lot of people really like the dark mode stuff. I'm not a huge fan of it, but I can totally understand where people are coming from on it. He says the dark mode will also include a high contrast mode, which should be pretty cool. Something I'm excited about is there's supposed to be a lot of enhancements for iOS and for iPads. And one of those is the ability for apps to actually have multiple windows. And he says within those individual windows, they will have the ability to have sheets that are attached, and you can detach those like little cards and then move them around, drag them around within those windows. So some nice UI enhancements, especially for apps and multi-window and multitasking. They're saying there's going to be a new undo and redo gesture, which is something we've been waiting on for a long time. The whole shake to undo, especially with a giant iPad, is not really a comfortable gesture. If you've noticed, many apps will include undo buttons, and I think that's a response to that weird gesture. So in iOS 13, supposedly you're going to be able to three-finger tap and then drag on the keyboard area, either to the left or right, to do an undo or redo. And there's going to be a little sort of onboarding wizard to teach you that new gesture in iOS 13. Safari on the iPad is going to automatically request the desktop version of websites. So no more getting, you know, weird iOS versions of websites on a 12.9 inch iPad, which was always bothersome. And you won't have to manually activate the desktop version thing. It should happen automatically. So that'll be a nice little enhancement. And also better font management in iOS. So many of you may not know that you can install custom fonts on iOS 12. Well, we're actually going to cover that a little bit later in the episode. But I guess once you learn that trick here in a few months, you might not need it anymore, because you're not going to have to install fonts from profiles in iOS 13. A few other updates mentioned. Updates to mail. New gestures to allow for the selection of multiple items in table views and collection views. Redesigned version of the Reminders app, and that supposedly will also be making its way to the Mac. And then a new volume heads-up display, probably one that's not going to block the whole screen like the current one does. Actually, Apple's been made fun of a few times for the gaudiness of the volume controls on iOS. And then finally, more in-app printing controls. So if you print from your iOS devices, you know that printing options are pretty limited. Supposedly that's going to be expanded. They didn't have a lot of details on how, but if you're a fan of printing, then you'll welcome that update. So a lot of nice updates coming in iOS 13. Of course, we expect Apple to show us a lot more at Worldwide Developer Conference in June. And Guillermo Rambo over at 9to5 Mac was kind of on a roll this week, because he also did some digging and found out about some of Apple's plans for their Find My apps. What I mean by Find My apps are Find My iPhone and Find My Friends. He says they're going to actually combine those into a new app, and they're doing that, a new single app, and they're doing that under the project code name Green Torch. He says the app will be available both for Mac and for iOS, so they're going to use the Marzipan technology to bring that to the Mac. And as far as new features, he says, and I didn't really understand this in the report, that there's actually going to be a new feature called Find Network that will allow your devices to be tracked even when they're not connected to Wi-Fi or cellular network. So I'm not sure why that's one called Find Network, nor how that would work unless it's some sort of peering technology that it uses to track down your devices. The report also claims that Apple is actually developing a new piece of hardware that would allow you to track any device via the app, basically a little tag that you would attach to a physical item, say like your keys, and then that would be paired through your iPhone to your iCloud account by placing that tag near your device, a lot like the way you would pair a set of AirPods. And then once paired, that thing can be tracked. You'll also get a notification if the tagged item is moved too far away from your phone. You can actually use geolocation to set up certain locations where that feature is disabled. So if you know, hey, I need to leave this thing in this area and I don't care if I move away from it, you can set that up. Also, the locations of your tagged items can be shared with friends and family members. So if they need to be able to find and track those things, And then you can add your contact information into a tag. And then when you enable lost mode on that item, so if you've lost it or misplaced it and somebody else gets their iOS device near that, it can actually display that contact information. So hopefully you get your device back. As far as when all of this is coming out, they could show off the application at Worldwide Developer Conference. It sounds like the tags and the hardware is a little bit further away. That could be announced along with new iPhone announcements, maybe in the fall, the September, October timeframe. But really, that's all speculation at this point. But sounds like a nice little update to the Find My iPhone, Find My Friends app. I think it makes sense to move those into a single application. And also, the idea of this new hardware is pretty neat as well. And then finally in the news for this week, interesting little update to a support article on Apple's website for the Apple Pencil 2, the new Apple Pencil that you dock and charge with your iPad, right? It connects magnetically. Turns out that can cause a problem with some car keyless entry fobs. So if you have one of those little fobs that you keep in your pocket, or probably more importantly, in your bag or your purse, and it's right next to your iPad where the Apple Pencil is charging, that can, it turns out, cause some interference that may impact that fob's ability to work. So if those two items are sitting next to each other, you might not be able to unlock or get into your car. I would presume it would also affect the starting of your vehicle as well. Apple says the interference only happens when the Pencil is actually actively charging. So if it's fully charged, you're okay. But if it's in the process of charging, it can cause that interference. Luckily, the fix is pretty easy. Just move the fob away from your charging Apple Pencil in your iPad, or detach the Apple Pencil from the iPad so it's not charging, and you should get the functionality of your key fob back. But just a funny little thing that popped up this week and in this update to an Apple support article. And with that, that is going to do it for the news for this week. Before we move on, I do want to take a quick moment and thank a couple other show sponsors, starting with CashFly. You know, I love CashFly. The reality is, without them, you wouldn't be hearing the show right now, because they host the downloads. They make sure that you get these episodes as quickly and as reliably as possible, even when my voice isn't as reliable as I would normally like it. And they'd actually like to help do that for your website and your business, because when websites don't load, people lose interest. That's a fact. For each second a web page takes to load, it costs a company about 16% in engagement. And fewer visits means fewer customers, and that's really not good for anyone. But CashFly has your back with their new web optimization capabilities. All of your content will be optimized before it's delivered to your visitors without requiring any extra development effort from you. And with the recent addition of CashFly's flexible edge application platform and implementation services, their capabilities reach far beyond that of any traditional CDN. CashFly's web content optimization solution actually includes powerful APIs for solving content distribution problems, on-the-fly next-generation image optimization, application load balancing, and smart asset delivery. Listen, if your website is directly tied to your revenue, and you know it is, optimize your site's content now. Guarantee the best user experience for all your customers, no matter where they are or what device they're using today. The folks at CashFly are even going to provide a free optimization consultation for listeners of this podcast. That's right, just for you. Know exactly where your site stands today with a Lighthouse score report, and learn how CashFly's web optimization solution can help add 60 points instantly to your score. Visit mac.cashfly.com, that's mac.cashfly.com, to get your free optimization consultation and find out how CashFly's web optimization solution can help your business. mac.cashfly.com, and a big thank you to CashFly for their support of the MacCast. I'd also like to thank Capterra for their support of the MacCast. You know, one of the best things about the internet is really the ability to get reviews and opinions on stuff, right? The stuff we eat, the stuff we buy, the places we might want to stay on vacation. We all use them all the time because we know it's the best way to make sure that we're making the right choices. So why don't we do that when we're making choices about the software we're going to buy and use for our business? Capterra is the leading free online resource to help you find the best software solutions for your business. You can easily search more than 700 specific categories of software, from things like email marketing to project management. Actually, an example of the kind of great software that you'll find on Capterra is Daylight for Mac by Market Circle. This is an awesome app from a great Mac developer and one of the best CRM apps for your Mac. And that's probably why on Capterra, it has a 4.5-star rating with great comments from over 275 reviewers. And these are real users of the software. And it's really those comments, I think, that are the value. They have over 750,000 of them from real software users on Capterra, so you can discover everything you need to make an informed decision. No matter what kind of software your business needs, Capterra makes it easy to discover the right solution fast. Join the millions of people who use Capterra each month to find the right tools for their business. Visit capterra.com/maccast for free today to find the tools to make an informed software decision for your business. capterra.com/maccast. That's capterra.com/maccast. Capterra, software selection simplified. And a huge thanks to Capterra for their support of the MacCast. The new AirPods. I wasn't sure if I was going to get them or not. Initially, I thought I was going to just do okay with my first generation AirPods. But as I mentioned on the show, they'd been suffering from depleting batteries. And I was debating the cost of actually getting the batteries replaced, which is about $100 for the set, or actually just going and getting a new set of AirPods. And considering I have a lot of wireless charging pucks around the house these days, and I just wanted to see if there were any differences and talk about them on the MacCast, I used that as a justification. And I say that, yes, knowing that, you know, I just wanted new ones. Let's just admit it. So I wanted to try them out, but at least I can talk about them here on the show. So I received them. First thing I will comment on is it took forever to get them because I wanted the version with the wireless charging case. I didn't see if I was going to pay the money to do the upgrade, any reason to get the ones without the wireless charging case, because I just didn't feel there was enough differences between them. So ended up getting the ones with the wireless charging case, which I absolutely love. But because of that, they were back ordered. It took about 3 weeks for them to get here. Seriously, I was kind of hoping it was the classic case of under promise, over deliver, but I'm guessing these things are super popular again. So they came, they're great. I would say physically, they're pretty much identical to my old ones, although there are some minor differences. Of course, the biggest one is the charging light on the front of the case instead of on the inside. I like the fact that I can see it when it's charging. What I don't like, though, is when it's not charging, when it's not lit up, it does kind of look like a little blemish on the front of the AirPods. If you put the two next to each other, it looks like it's got this weird, like, thing on it, and you want to just wipe it away. It's a little pin, little tiny pinhole sitting there. So not a big deal, but is a difference. On the back, there's two differences. The hinge is a satin finish versus the glossy finish of the original one. And also the little button for doing the manual syncing, if you need to, you know, enable Bluetooth pairing manually, that button has been moved up more to the center of the device. And I think that's because of the location of the wireless charging coil, but that's just my speculation. I might have read about that somewhere, but anyway, those are kind of the minor differences. Still has a lightning connector on the bottom, so wireless charging is great, but you're not forced to use the wireless charging. One thing I did notice in the unboxing, though, is that I'm wondering how many people actually threw away the USB to lightning cable that actually comes in the box, because it's under all of the packaging. So you open it up, and if you don't notice the little tab to pull up the plastic tray, you might not even realize that there's actually a charging cable included in the box. So I'm guessing a lot of people maybe threw that away, which is a major bummer. But if you're an Apple fan, like a lot of us are, you probably have the box still lying around somewhere. So maybe you didn't throw it out. Maybe you just didn't grab that lightning cable when you did your unboxing. The AirPods themselves look identical. I really can't tell any physical difference in the AirPods themselves. I don't think there is a difference, but I do think there might be a slight sound difference, and that I wasn't expecting. So I did a little testing. I actually put one of each AirPod in each ear, so one of the new ones and my original one, and did a switching back and forth while listening to podcasts, movies, and music. And one thing I did note was that the new AirPod did seem a hair faster to connect or switch over than the old one. But on the sound front, what I noticed was that I actually might like the sound of the old AirPods a little bit better than the new ones. I kind of felt like they better represented the mids and highs. The new ones seem to have a lot more bass. I would say also a kind of richer sound, which a lot of people might really like. But because I listen to podcasts and TV shows and movies more, I like the fact that I can hear especially more of the highs, more of that vocal range with the original ones. So I'm going to have to keep using them for a while to see if I do have that preference, but I did notice that difference, and I'm not really sure how it's achieved, because again, physically, the AirPods look exactly the same. I don't know if it's something with the new H1 chip or if it's just simply a tweaking of the software or the firmware, I guess I would assume, that is in the AirPods. But yeah, let me know if that's something, if you got new ones, if you noticed a sound difference at all. It could just be, you know, information bias too. Maybe I'm just imagining it. I don't really know. But that's kind of my first impressions of the new AirPods. So, hey, I'm going to take a break from talking now. Actually, I have Brian, and he had a little follow-up and comment on something we talked about on a recent episode of the MacCast related to the MacBook Pro, or as you're going to find out, a MacBook keyboard.
Hey, Adam. This is Brian from Florida with a comment about the rare Apple apology that you talked about back on the March 31st episode. So just a couple of points here, Adam. First, the article from the Wall Street Journal was actually about Joanna Stern's 2018 MacBook Air rather than the Pro. And for me, Adam, this is really disheartening because I'm looking to replace my 2011 MacBook Pro with the 2018 MacBook Air. But if what Joanna Stern is experiencing on her keyboard is going to be symptomatic of something the rest of us may expect over a longer period of time, because we're not maybe subjecting our keyboards to as much wear and tear as she would, then clearly this isn't something that we want to buy. And it's certainly giving me pause. And fundamentally, this is a design problem. I think, as everybody knows, this whole butterfly keyboard design was really forced on the Apple engineering team, it seems, by the designers. Because the designers are always driving to make everything as thin and light as possible, regardless of the consequences to the functionality of the device or its reliability. So you've got a real design failure here. And honestly, if the design team doesn't take a breath, step back, and look at what they've done, then it may be time to get some fresh blood on the design team at Apple. A design team that will take a more balanced approach to form versus function. I think good design understands the balance of those two objectives and doesn't put one ahead of the other. And we're not talking about a radical redesign here in terms of thinness. An extra millimeter or two, would that really make the device ugly? I don't think that's the case at all, Adam. I don't know about how you and the other listeners feel, but even a small number of users experiencing these keyboard issues is too many. There's no reason a keyboard should last fewer than 6 months, like it did in Joanna Stern's case. For the rest of us, if it takes me 2 years or maybe even 3 years for the keyboard to start getting those symptoms, that's still unacceptable. And it's time for Apple to go back to the drawing board, both on the thinness of the MacBook Air as well as the keyboard design that was forced into that particular model because of the imperative to make the device so thin. Knock it off, Apple. Your devices are thin enough already. In fact, they're probably getting too thin, and the keyboard problems that we're seeing are clear evidence of that. I'd be interested in knowing what other listeners think, but that's my two cents. Thanks, Adam.
Hey, Brian, I'd be interested in knowing what other listeners think as well. Of course, I'm going to share my thoughts with you. One is I don't disagree with a lot of the things that you're talking about. I think it's 100% certain at this point that the new keyboard design technology has a serious flaw. It has a serious issue and it impacts a lot of people. Apple tried to mitigate it with the membrane thing, and it's turning out that maybe that's not a ideal solution. Now, that being said, I've had very few people who listen to the show come back and report having problems. We know the problems exist. I'm not saying that they don't exist, because there's many, many instances and reports of people who are having issues. I don't know if there's maybe some environmental factors behind that. And I don't mean things like, hey, you know, you're not clean, or you're not keeping your keyboard clean, you're eating around your keyboard, and that's causing the problem. Not those environmental factors. I'm thinking more things like heat, humidity, moisture. You know, what kind of environment are you in? Dust is obviously a problem. So if you're in a dustier area or an area where that might be more prevalent, I'm thinking that those are where some of the problems are cropping up. Now, again, that doesn't dismiss the issue, because Apple should be accounting for that. There should be a wide, you know, they shouldn't be so delicate that simply dust getting under there causes these problems. And it obviously is. So I agree with you on all of those things. Apple needs to fix it. They need to find an improvement. Where I don't necessarily agree is in the assumption that this was Apple, a classic case of them putting form over function. That could be the case, but I think that presumes a lot. It presumes that the designers don't care about the function. And I don't see that as being the case at Apple. That's never really been the case. I also don't believe that Apple didn't think or didn't believe that the butterfly technology that they developed was a better technology. Now, in practice, in longevity, in real-world scenarios, it obviously is not working. I don't doubt that they extensively tested this in their labs, but again, these are controlled environments. They're not out in the real world. And as we find a lot of times with things that are engineered, they work fine in the lab and during development, and even in QA testing and in, you know, I have no doubt that Apple did stress testing on these keyboard designs. So they made it into the real world and something else happened. They're behaving differently, whatever. But I don't think we can presume what actually happened. I'm not saying what you're proposing isn't the case. I'm just saying we can't take that as an absolute. I mean, we really don't know, and there's probably no way we could ever really know. You know, making it thicker, would that get better? I don't know. Can they not take this butterfly design and maybe improve it so it doesn't suffer from this issue? I think they probably could. And if they really truly believe that it's a better technology, then they need to iterate on it. They need to improve it. Of course, that doesn't help the people who already have the ones that are having the problems. The only thing that Apple is really going to be able to do there is, other than doing a full recall and a replacement, which I don't think is feasible, I think what we'll end up seeing them do is a warranty extension program. So for those people who do buy these devices for 3 years from the date of purchase, they will have the ability to have them repaired, replaced, fixed, whatever the resolution might be if they suffer from it. I do think it at this point, it doesn't look like it is a widespread issue. It is a significant issue. But like I said, I don't hear a lot of reports within our community, which is pretty large here, the MacCast. I don't have a lot of people reporting the problems to me. I'd have a handful of people, and I think that's what Apple is seeing. That's what Apple has sort of commented on. Will time change that? It might. You know, somebody like Joanna Stearns is obviously using her keyboard a lot more because that's her main job. And like you said, those of us who use keyboards less frequently, it might take longer for the issues to surface. There's also some fixes out there. I know just like cleaning under it with compressed air can sometimes dislodge whatever, causing keyboard sticking problems. So I think a lot of people are going through those resolutions as well. So again, it's something that is significant. Apple has admitted the problem, and hopefully they can come to some sort of resolution. And I think they ultimately will. So we'll just have to wait to see in the next generation what they change with regards to the keyboard. I agree. I don't think there's a problem if they end up going thicker. I don't think there'll be a problem if they end up going back to the old design. Will they do that? I don't think historically that's the direction Apple will move in. I think they really believe in this technology, and I think they're going to iterate on it and improve it until it doesn't have these issues. So that's my two cents. I'd love to hear from the rest of the community. So shoot us some feedback, maccast@gmail.com. Apple expanding and growing as a services company. Like it or not, that's a direction they're moving in, as exemplified by the last special event that they had, where they talked about all of the new services that they are going to be bringing on board. And those announcements, of course, garnered a lot of reactions. I gave you my thoughts and opinions on the announcements here on the MacCast. And this past week, many of you emailed in to share your opinions. And one that came through that I wanted to share with you was from James. And he had some comments and some concerns that he sent me in an email. And I just wanted to read through them and then comment on them and some of his comments in a couple places. So I'll do my best. Here's what he had written in the email. I just had a few comments about the possible future of Apple. Apple has always been a company that produces high-end, high-margin hardware accompanied by most excellent software. However, as we know, hardware is now, quote, too good. For the average person, there is no need to upgrade a phone, iPad, computer very frequently. Their existing devices are too good. So Apple has chosen to enter crowded markets where they have no expertise. The new streaming service joins a very competitive field, and I think he's talking specifically about Apple TV Plus. Many people have Amazon Prime, And for them, the free streaming service is sufficient. For people who want more, Netflix is the next option. Apple is going to be competing with some very successful companies at something they have no expertise in. There have been many rich people who made money in other fields that decided to produce movies and ended up losing lots of money. And now Tim Cook et al. Want to direct their producers. Don't do anything mean or nasty. Yeah, that's really going to work for movies in this day and time. Do they think they're going to rival Disney? Now, my comments on that. You know, I don't think, and Apple has really said as much, that they expect to rival, quote unquote, any other streaming video service, at least not at first. Apple has really said, and they said at the event, basically, they were focusing on quality storytelling. So I think they're trying to differentiate their service with the quality versus the quantity. Is that going to work for them? I really don't know. The big question at this point is, how are they charging for it? What is the price point? Is it 99 cents a month? Then I think a lot of people might really sign up for it. Is it 10 bucks a month? That might be a harder sell just based on streaming video quality. Are they entering a very crowded and competitive market? Absolutely. There is no doubt about that. I 100% agree with you there. Are they moving into a field where they don't have a lot of experience? Yes, they are, but they have bought into that experience. They have hired some incredible people that are working with them on these services, talented people in the fields that they're going into. So they're not starting from a place of nothing. And we've seen them do this before. They did this with Apple Music. And just like with Apple Music, the video service is being seen, or Apple entering the service, they're being seen as an underdog. Apple Music was looked at as an underdog as well. And as we know, recently here in the US, they surpassed Spotify for paid subscribers. So Apple has a history of also entering businesses that they haven't been in before and pretty quickly becoming very successful at those. So I don't discount that they might be able to do that here. Will they? Maybe not. So I understand the trepidation there. I understand the concern. I share those concerns. The next comment James had was, quote, "If you want to see a successful services company, look at Microsoft today. I don't think Apple, at least at this time, rivals Microsoft for services." I just wanted to comment on this one, and it's not to point out that Microsoft isn't great at services, and I agree with you there, James. I think they're a great services company and a company that, you know, many people entering services should look at as an example. But just factually, I do want to point out that, and I looked up these numbers because I was curious, you know, how big is Microsoft services business versus the services business that Apple has put together? Turns out Microsoft Intelligent Cloud, which includes things like their enterprise services like Azure, it made revenue in the second quarter of 2019 of $9.4 billion. Apple services revenue in the first quarter of 2019 was $10.9 billion. So actually, Apple's services business in terms of revenue, and I know revenue is not everything, but in terms of revenue, actually is larger than Microsoft's services business. So they definitely are, quote unquote, rivaling Microsoft services, at least in that one statistic. Going back to the email. As far as the credit card, you said you were excited about Apple's offering 3% off Apple products. Look at my Amazon card, which I use much more frequently than I do my Apple purchases. It gives 5% back for Amazon purchases. In my case, that is much more useful than a measly 3% discount from Apple, which I will use about every year or two. My second credit card is a Visa that gives standard 2% cash back on every purchase, regardless of the category. So you don't have to figure out if you're getting 1%, 2%, or 3%. Again, I totally agree. If you make a lot of Amazon purchases, then having the Amazon card is a much better deal than the Apple card, at least for your Amazon purchases. And I would probably say it's worth getting both. I buy a lot of stuff on Amazon. I don't have an Amazon card. I'm considering getting that as well and using that for all of my Amazon purchases. Why not? It's 5% cash back. But my point in the comments that I made on the last episode was, for me, I also buy a lot of Apple services, movies, software, music, apps, products from Apple stores, both online and in retail stores. And why not get 3% back on those purchases? My credit card doesn't give me that. Even if I did the 2%, that doesn't give me that. I'd get an extra percent by getting the Apple card. And that seems like a good idea for me. Is it for everyone? No. And I don't think that's the point. I don't think everybody is going to get and benefit from an Apple card. But I think a lot of people will. And hey, it's just pretty cool, you know, having the metal card and a lot of the other security and privacy features. That's pretty neat. So this is not an all versus, you know, nothing, this card versus that card kind of thing. It really comes down to what kinds of things are you buying and what kinds of cards benefit you the most. You know, neither of these cards, they're cash back things, right? Neither of these cards are giving you trip points, and some people really like to play that game. Whatever it is, at the end of the day, these things are credit cards. They're really not that exciting, right? But it is something that Apple announced, and I'm looking forward to it. So finally, I will also point out that you do get 2% cash back on the Apple card for every place that you can use Apple Pay. And you might argue, well, Apple Pay doesn't have as wide deployment in the U.S. as it does other places. Totally agree. But I'm using Apple Pay more and more, and the more I can use it, the more I will benefit in the Apple Card program. So I'm looking forward to it. I totally understand if it's not something that you're interested in. Back to the email. I love what Apple has done and how I have enjoyed their products, but I feel that they're going down an unknown road trying to desperately recover their growth. I hope I'm wrong, but I don't see Johnny Ive being useful for Apple News Plus or Apple streaming service. So they are wasting a lot of good engineering trying to do something they have no experience in. I hope I'm wrong. You know, I don't think that you're wrong. Again, I want to reiterate, these concerns are legitimate. I don't mean to be discounting them at all. I will be the first to say that I had giant fears about Apple heading down this path when they announced the iPhone. I commented that I didn't want them to become the next Sony, the next consumer electronics company that grew too big, got into too many other pies, and then, you know, lost their business. I can say, looking back, I was totally wrong. You can go back and listen to those episodes where I said my concern, Apple might be becoming the next Sony, and here we are. They're doing exactly what Sony did. They're moving into music. They're moving into movies. They're moving into all kinds of businesses where they don't have experience. So I get it. You're not unfounded in your concerns. This is a somewhat risky move for Apple. And I'm saying somewhat versus a big risky move because, hey, they have a lot of safety nets in place. They have a lot of cash on hand. They can afford to make some mistakes. And in the case of especially the video streaming service, I would say they're moving pretty cautiously into the space. They're not jumping in with, you know, trying to compete with the likes of Hulu or Amazon or Netflix, right? They're starting small and they're going to try to build a business. The other thing, moving back to the hardware front and the engineering front, and I've mentioned this on a previous show as well, they're building a bridging service here. Yeah, this is a bridging move. It is a business that is growing and can get them to the next big thing when it comes to hardware. It gets Apple past peak iPhone and to the next hardware thing. So I can assure you that the engineering talent at Apple right now is not going to waste. They are working on stuff that we just don't know about yet. Yeah, we have rumors, you know, artificial intelligence, computer learning, designing chips, automation, autonomous systems, VR, AR, all of these things are probably under active development at Apple, and we don't know all of the applications. What's the hardware? Don't know. All we have are the rumors. A car, some virtual glasses, some other technology, maybe. More likely, it's something that Apple has thought of, and we haven't, and we won't know what it is until they announce it. That's classic Apple. That's what they do. They come in, we don't know what they're doing, we speculate a lot about what they're doing, and then they completely blow us away or disrupt with something amazing. And there's no reason to doubt that they're not going to do that again. Bottom line, the thing that you're most right about in your comments about Apple is that they, quote, have a lot of good engineering talent. There are extremely talented and smart people there, some of the best in the world, and they are laser focused on designing, building, and creating the next thing that is going to change the world. That is what they do. That is their passion, and that's what they have always done, and I don't think that will ever change at Apple. They also have very smart and talented leadership right now. I don't doubt the talents of Tim Cook and his executive team, but a lot of people do count them out. They've been counted out so many times in history, maybe more than any other company on the planet, and they always come through. They're still here. They're still making amazing, great stuff, and that's one of the reasons why I love this company. They have proven time and time again, even when everybody has doubted them, that they can produce. And I think that they're going to be fine with the services business. I think they've already proven that they can do that stuff. You know, I'll point out that everybody thought when they were getting into that phone business that that was crazy. And that took over the company. It became their largest profit center, more than Macs. And everybody looked at that and said, well, that's it. They're done. This is crazy. They're getting in a business they know nothing about, and they're going to die. And they didn't. So all I can do is maybe reassure you, looking at that history, that they're probably not making a mistake here. And again, I think they're being smart about it. I think they're being cautious, and I'm sure they have a plan B or a thing to move to if this doesn't work out. But I think it is. I think it actually really is going to work for them. I think the services stuff is pretty exciting. Maybe not all of it for everybody, and maybe a lot of it doesn't speak to you. But I can assure you there's some great hardware and other things coming as well. So just hang in there, remain faithful, and I hope that helps you out. And I'd love to hear from the community on this. If you agree with me, if you agree with James, if you're somewhere in the middle, shoot us some feedback, some emails. Audio comments, maccast@gmail.com. Alrighty, one more item to talk with you about. And this one's a cool one because I got a great question via Twitter. Maccast on Twitter, if you want to follow me. But the question was basically, can I transfer fonts from macOS to iOS? And the answer is absolutely yes. Currently, it's a bit complicated, but as you heard earlier, it might get a little bit easier in iOS 13. But currently in iOS 12, it's a bit complex, but it's not too bad. And you also need an app to support it and to actually install fonts. There's a few of them on the App Store. I'm going to recommend one of them to you. And how you're able to use the fonts on iOS is going to depend on what apps you're using. Typically, the fonts are really only available in apps where you can like do some text editing, you know, where you might actually have a font chooser to choose from. If you have an app that's more like a RSS reader app that maybe lets you pick from a few fonts, a handful of fonts. Generally, not all of the custom fonts will show up in there. So think more like Pages or Word versus any other application. But if you want to install them, you absolutely can. You can install TrueType fonts or OpenType fonts, open typeface fonts, OTF or TTF fonts, basically. And you just need to get them onto your device. That's kind of the first challenge. The easiest way to do that is probably to copy them through some sort of cloud storage location like iCloud or Dropbox, so you can actually access them from the Files app on your iOS device. And then, like I said, you are going to need an app to actually convert the fonts right now from the font files, or I guess really what they're doing is adding the fonts or wrapping them up in an iOS profile. So you need to create a font profile that gets installed through the profiles on your device, which can be accessed through the settings, general, under profiles. And like I said, there are a lot of apps that will allow you to generate these profile files and load fonts. A good one that I like is called Any Font. It's $1.99 on the App Store, and there is a 99-cent in-app purchase that will give you access to a library of over 1,000 fonts. So you can actually, rather than having to manually copy the fonts over from your Mac or from some other location, you can actually get access to a library of about 1,000 fonts right inside the Any Font app. So for, $3 total, you can have a lot of fonts available on your iOS device. Now, the installation process, even with the app, is a little bit tricky. So I'm going to cover how you would do it with the Any Font app, but the general process, the general steps are pretty much the same regardless of the application that you use. So step one is transfer the font to your device storage, either through like Dropbox or iCloud. Select the font that you want from, say, the Dropbox app or the Files app, and then click the share button in that app, or click on the share icon. Because what you need to do is you need to get to the open in option. So you're going to tap on the open in option, and then you're going to select the font loading app that you installed earlier. So in this case, we're using Any Font. So in Any Font, so what it'll do when you say open in is it will copy the font into that application and then launch you into that app. So then inside the app, or again, inside any app, what you're going to do is you're going to tap on the Install Own Fonts tab, and then you're going to tap on the font that you want to install. And when you do that in any app, you'll see a warning message about this, quote, website is trying to download a configuration profile. You'll need to tap the allow option, but if you look, you'll notice it's actually installing from a local host website, which is a website running locally inside the app. So it's not actually downloading anything from the internet. What the app is doing is it's generating that profile file, and the way you install profile files is through a website or a web browser. So it has to kind of simulate that process. And when you do that, you'll confirm, or it will confirm, that the profile was quote unquote downloaded to your device. And where it was placed is into that profiles section of your settings. So after you've kind of loaded the font with the app, you need to do some additional steps. So you're going to go into settings, general, profiles on your device to actually activate and install the font. So the app is just generating the font profile file from the font file that you uploaded to your device, and then the installation is actually handled by the operating system in the profiles section. So go to settings, general, profiles, tap on the downloaded font profile, which you should see in the list, and then you're going to tap on install, which is in the upper right-hand corner. It will ask you to enter your passcode, And then you need to tap next on the this configuration profile installs the font screen. Then you're going to tap install on the unsigned profile warning screen, because it's going to give you a warning that the profile is an unsigned profile. And then you're going to need to tap install again. And then finally tap done. And now your font should be installed and available inside apps like Pages, Keynote, Word, and Excel. So there you have it. A lot of steps to install a font. You can see why in iOS 13, maybe Apple wants to make this process a little bit easier, but it can be done. And you can have cool custom fonts available to use in those apps. If you ever need to remove a font, all you have to do is delete the profile from the Settings General Profiles area. Tap on the font profile you want to remove. Tap the Remove Profile link. Enter your passcode and then tap Remove. And then the font will be basically uninstalled. So that's how you do it. And that's going to be it for this episode of the MacCast. Before I leave you, I do want to take a quick moment and thank a show sponsor. That's Smile, makers of Text Expander, PDF Pen, Disk Label, also Text Expander for iPhone and iPad, along with PDF Pen for iOS and PDF Pen Scan Plus. You can get more information and details on all of their great applications by visiting smilesoftware.com/podcast. Bandwidth for the MacCast is provided by CacheFly. You can find them at cachefly.com. And all advertising on the MacCast is handled by Backbeat Media. They are at backbeatmedia.com. As always, I love hearing from you. If you have a comment, a question, something you'd like to hear covered on a future episode of the MacCast, send your emails and audio comments to maccast@gmail.com. You're also welcome to call in on the listener hotline, that phone number, 281-622-4269, 281-MAC-IM-9. Leave a voicemail there. And if you need show notes, links to anything that I talked about on this or any other episode of the MacCast, you can find those on the website. That's at maccast.com. And finally, if you want to follow me on social media, I'm on Twitter, twitter.com/MacCast, or you can check out the MacCast Facebook page over at facebook.com/TheMacCast. That's going to do it for now. I'm going to go rest my voice. Until next time, I will talk to you all again real soon. I hope.